and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Boy, do we have a good show for you today, jam-packed. The Washington Teachers Union has endorsed, of all people, Talana Reed, a woman who called cops pigs, who encouraged rioting over racial justice issues. We'll dive into that endorsement and some of the questions that were asked on the endorsement questionnaire by the Washington Education Association. Something tells me some of you won't be so surprised by some of those questions. We'll get into it. Also, the mayor of Yakima, a Democrat, called 911 on what she called right-wing signature gatherers, and dispatchers gave her a very quick lesson in the law and the First Amendment. Also, Seattle prepares to pass a watered-down drug ordinance happening at 2 p.m. today. We're going to discuss why that particular ordinance is designed to set police officers up to fail. All of that and more coming up. But first, if you have not become an Undivided subscriber, help support the show, help support the mission and the movement to give common sense a comeback in Washington State and beyond. That's just $5 a month, undividedpod.com, and you get access to our exclusive Sunday show, Sundays with subscribers. You guys know that signature gathering in that process has become something of a pet topic of mine. In particular, the real efforts from state Democrats, from county Democratic parties to interfere in the signature gathering process. And I'm not saying that Republicans or conservatives haven't done things when it comes to signature gathering for referendums or initiatives that are an issue. But more recently, when you have one party control of the entire state, initiatives and referendums are kind of the only ability of the people who dissent from the majority party to push back. And so more and more often, those initiatives and referendums have to do with issues that are brought up by conservatives or Republicans and that they prefer. So we, you know, had helped collect signatures for the repeal of Senate Bill 5599, which had to do with parental rights in Washington. And I mean, I was protested at a coffee shop in Lacey called anti-transgender, which is the furthest thing from my ideology of, hey, you do you. And we also detailed some really concerning incidents where, I mean, elected members of county Democratic parties had been, in my opinion, violating state law when it came to not intimidating or harassing individuals collecting signatures. It also had to do with 5599. I wrote a letter to Secretary of State Steve Hobbs expressing my concern with this really alarming trend. He wrote a letter back. Hopefully we can get together sometime in the fall and talk about policy proposals to protect the signature gathering process. So anyway, when this story came across my timeline, I just thought we really need there to be a public education initiative on the rights of signature gatherers, because too many people, including people who should know, don't. And this also speaks to, I think, when you talk about do people respect the initiative process and in the referendum process, sometimes it comes down to do they respect the topic at hand? And not do they respect the process as part of the democratic process. It has to do with, well, do I like what they're collecting signatures for or not? If I don't like it, then I'm opposed to it. And if I do like it, then it's great. So the mayor of Yakima, we'll start with this, because there were a couple social media posts that popped up. And one of them was from Douglas White. If his name sounds familiar, Doug White ran as a Democrat for Congress in the 4th Congressional District in 2022. He lost. But he posted on social media some pictures of a signature gatherer outside a Walmart in Yakima. He said, "Illegal petitioners outside West Valley Walmart. They have been trying to get rid of them for a week, but they refuse to leave. Police and sheriff will do nothing." Sergeant Shepard of the Yakima Police Department states, quote, "It's their constitutional right. Do you agree? What will you do about it?" And I'm thinking, what do you mean, what will you do about it? And the pictures show a guy, and he has a sign that says, "Washington conservatives, stop taxes, police pursuit, parental rights." And who that man is a signature gatherer for the Let's Go Washington initiatives that we've been talking about on the show. Very common sense. There's 6 of them. One would lower gas prices by getting rid of the carbon tax. One would restore reasonable police pursuits. One has to do with parental rights. One has to do with making sure that lawmakers can't pass an illegal income tax and just call it something else. So these are pretty common sense things that I would argue a vast majority of Washingtonians would support if they take the time to learn about them. But what I'd, and Nicole, can you put the Doug White post back up for a second? Because there's a couple notes I want to make about this before we dive into what the mayor of Yakima did. So he says illegal petitioners outside West Valley Walmart. As I'm going to explain to you coming up in this segment, this was not an illegal petitioner. It was a petitioner he didn't particularly like, because what, he had a sign that said conservatives, stop taxes, police pursued, parental rights. Is that so scary to Doug White? And then I have to laugh at, well, not even laugh, kind of question what he means at the end. What will you do about it? What are you suggesting people do about it? You want him to go there and harass this guy? Wow, well, that would be in keeping with what other members of your party have done to signature gatherers that they don't particularly like. So shame on Doug White for what I consider to be a very inflammatory and misguided Facebook post, but it gets worse from there. So the mayor of Yakima, who is a woman named Janice, I think it's Decchio, she's going to say it here in this 911 call, because she ends up calling 911 over this guy who's outside the Walmart. She's the mayor of Yakima. She calls 911 on a signature gatherer and claims that she had gotten complaints from constituents. This is like a 3-minute chunk, but there's a lot of elements of it that are really, really important for you to hear. So again, this is the mayor of Yakima calling 911 on a signature gatherer outside a Walmart.
911. Hi, this is Mayor Decchio. I know that this isn't an emergency call, but I need to talk to somebody. I've emailed the chief, but there's some far right wing petitioners at Walmart, and they're not leaving after Walmart has asked them repeatedly to do so, and the police have not taken them off the premises.
We did have a call of that earlier. Who is this?
This is Mayor Decchio.
Okay. Let me let you talk to my supervisor, but I do know that the officers have let them know that they would have to have a court order to have them removed.
It's on private property? Okay.
Yeah, I don't know the legalities of that, but let me get you to my supervisor.
Okay.
This is Dr. Sickle.
Hi, this is Mayor Decchio, and I have had some constituents call me to tell me about some right-wing petitioners over at Walmart, and that Walmart does not want them on their property, and the police have come out and told them that they can't do anything about it. And I'm wondering, how can that be? If petitioners were on my yard, the police could take them out if they were in my private property.
I can just read you what this email I have from legal says, or if you want to talk to a sergeant, I can have them call you as well. But basically, it says, under Washington law of right to access on private property for political purpose, it extends to the circulation of petitions. It says that for this reason, the city of Yakima will not remove petition signature gatherers absent a court order issued by Yakima Superior Court prohibiting the group from collecting signatures.
Even if they were on my yard?
Yeah, it has to do with the right of access on private property for political purposes.
That's insane. So Walmart has no rights.
They have to go to get an order from Superior Court prohibiting a group from collecting signatures, is what this says.
Okay. And how long does that take?
I would have no idea about that.
Okay.
I can have the sergeant give you a call if you'd like, if he might have more information. I'm just reading what they've sent to me as far as that goes.
Okay. Yeah, you can give me a call.
So I'm going to play more of that 911 call coming up in a second, just to reiterate something that she said in there. But this was posted all over social media because there was backlash to what Doug White had put out saying, what are we going to do about this illegal signature gatherer? And then this 911 call also got posted online by Glenn Morgan, who is a conservative sort of activist and journalist. And immediately people started pointing out, and as contrary as it might sound, actually there are some protections under state law to collect signatures on public property. And the way that I saw Tim Iman quoted, who, you know, is a longtime initiative guy, quoted as saying, if even if it's a Walmart, you know, and it's technically a private company, if they have allowed that space, you know, outside in that right of way to be used for Girl Scouts, for the Red Kettle campaign, then, you know, they're kind of saying that if you exclude certain people, then that would become a First Amendment issue. And so the law does state that in order to remove them, you need to have a court order. Now, I think the 911 dispatcher is mistaken when it comes to personal yards and property, et cetera. A Walmart parking lot is a little bit different. But anyway, so once this went out online, at the end of the 911 call, she actually gives the dispatcher her phone number. And that was not bleeped out in the versions of it that went online. And so she's saying, and before I read this, I don't doubt that she got harassed a little bit on her phone. And that's not acceptable. And hopefully people were, you know, not using her personal number, but she says that they were. However, this is a common tactic that we see used by the left all the time. We've seen it in the Seattle City Council. I've complained about it all the time. You know, trolls of mine on Twitter use it, which is if they get backlash for something they've done, then they immediately try to deflect reasonable backlash by claiming, oh, I'm being harassed and I'm being intimidated, so that they are then the victim and you will back off of criticizing their actions. And that's what she is doing in a statement to the Yakima Herald Republic. She said, since this 911 call was made public without my personal phone number being redacted, I have had hundreds of phone calls, texts, and voicemails from across the country, some of which are quite juvenile and include sexual harassment. She went on to say that the harassing phone calls, texts, and voicemails also have been directed at her husband, a disabled veteran with PTSD. So I hope that's not the case. And we have reached out to the mayor to ask her for copies of any texts or voicemails that she received. I certainly hope there isn't anybody harassing or sexually harassing her over it. However, I know what this tactic is, and it's the victimization tactic, so that we won't continue to scrutinize what she did. And we are going to continue to scrutinize what she did, because I think there's one key point here. And to me, it has to do with the theme of the show. Would she have done what she did if it were people collecting signatures for something she agreed with? Would she have gone to those lengths to call 911, to complain about this, if it were someone out there collecting signatures for an issue that Democrats agreed with? So in this article, again, from the Yakima Herald Republic, she, you know, pushes back against any suggestion that this had to do with the political leanings of the people behind the initiative. She said, who the group was is not the issue here, as I don't care, nor even know what they were petitioning about. Okay, that's not true, because again, I will revisit a clip from the 911 call.
There's some far right-wing petitioners at Walmart. I have had some constituents call me to tell me about some right-wing petitioners over at Walmart.
Right-wing, far right-wing petitioners. And she's trying to say, who the group was is not the issue here, as I don't care nor even know what they were petitioning about. Far right-wing petitioners. Clearly, who the group is and what they're petitioning about is a problem to you, or you wouldn't have felt the need repeatedly in the 911 call, and by the way, inaccurately, to describe them as far right-wing. Is it far right-wing to want police to be able to pursue violent criminals? Is it far right-wing to not want a carbon tax that has added 50 cents per gallon of gasoline? If that's far right-wing, as I often say, then sign me up. That's ridiculous. The other thing that she said there is that people told her that this guy was harassing shoppers and that the manager had called the police numerous times during the week and she had asked the petitioners to move from the entrance of the store. And she repeated this, that she said that they were harassing shoppers. Nowhere in the 3.5 minute 911 call that the Yakima mayor made did she say anything about any like harassment, intimidation, anything illegal that the actual signature gatherer was doing. All she kept saying is there are far right wing signature gatherers and Walmart doesn't want them there. So you would think if she had been told that they were harassing and scaring shoppers that she would have relayed that to the 911 dispatcher. No, she only said that in hindsight after she was criticized. Now, this gets even better. Oh, if it's even possible. So our friend Ari Hoffman was messaging me about this story as it was starting to gain traction online yesterday. And he had sent her an email for comment, the mayor. Before I read the email she sent back, it's worth noting that Ari's email to her seeking comment was very reasonable. He had asked her things like, okay, what were people doing that, you know, would be considered harassment? Why did you feel the need to call 911 if you said at the beginning of the phone call that it wasn't an emergency? Why didn't you call the non-emergency line? So he basically listed a bunch of questions that I feel like were very reasonable for her to answer. This is, I kid you not, the email that Yakima Mayor Janice Decio sent back to Ari Hoffman. Good morning, Ari. Thank you for reaching out and for your concern. Have a great day. Oh my God, if that isn't a big middle finger, I don't know what is. Good morning, Ari. Thank you for reaching out and for your concern. Have a nice day. No answer whatsoever. So this is not, first of all, I'm glad she now got a lesson on what the laws are around signature gathering. There is no way this mayor would have done this, would have posted about this, or Doug White, the former Democratic congressional candidate, if these were signature gatherers collecting signatures for something they agreed with. So much for valuing democracy. But this is not the end of this, because tonight there is a city council meeting. And in Yakima, the way that it works is the mayor's on the city council. And so we are told that this is going to be brought up this evening. So I very much look forward to hearing what the mayor of Yakima has to say about what she did and about I hope it's something more than have a great day. And so we will revisit this story tomorrow. But again, it goes back to what I said at the beginning is, you know, signature gathering and protecting that process, regardless of what people are collecting signatures for, it's legally protected. It is an important right of Washingtonians. It's an important check on one party rule. And I'm really passionate about not only trying to find ways to protect that process and make sure people can engage in it, but I also do think that we need some sort of public education campaign on what the rights of signature gatherers are and what the rights of people are to protest signature gatherers. And so I think that would be an important first step. I'm glad in this case the Yakima Police Department knew full well what it would take for Walmart to remove that individual. And that was a lawful court order. And the mayor of Yakima now knows that as well. Okay, let's go over to Marysville. Coming up on the show, we're going to talk about the city of Seattle, you know, racing toward at 2 p.m. today, passing a watered-down version of a drug possession statute. And that, to me, is just sort of a bare minimum step. But you have other cities that are really trying to take things a step further in trying to combat this real issue of street disorder that has extended far beyond Seattle at this point. And Marysville has come up with, there's a proposal of what I think is a really common sense way to deal with this issue, a really common sense ordinance. And essentially, it would institute mandatory minimum sentences for what they're calling public disorder crimes. Specifically, this would be targeted at people who are repeat offenders, who are always out there doing the same things, creating a public nuisance time and time again. And the more times they're arrested, convicted of doing these things, the more time they would have to spend in jail. So let's take a look at the ordinance as proposed. It defines public disorder crime as theft in the third degree, vehicle prowling, criminal trespass, use of a controlled substance in a public place. So if you are convicted of, or you have a case where, you know, basically it can be resolved in various ways, but where it ended with you having to admit guilt, if you're convicted of 2+ crimes, then you have to, within 5 years, all this is within a 5-year period, then you have to spend 30 days in jail. That's a minimum. If you're convicted of 4 or more public nuisance crimes in the 5-year period, 60 days in jail. If you're convicted of 6+ public nuisance crimes in a 5-year period, then you have to spend 90 days in jail. And honestly, that's not even very much. If you've committed 6 public disorder crimes, so like that's 6 vehicle prowls in 5 years, you got to spend 90 days in jail. That seems really reasonable to me. And it also is an opportunity for a reset. And why are you prowling through vehicles? Probably a drug addict. You're probably looking for something that you can sell to buy drugs, because you're not going to get a lot out of a vehicle prowl, right? You might get a couple hits of something. So that's typically who's committing those crimes. So it gives you those 90 days, like, hey, we keep arresting you for this. You keep trying to, you know, get you help, which I think is always the key, get you help for the underlying issue. But if you're doing this six times, you're caught six times, which means God knows how many times you've actually done it, that you weren't caught. If you're caught six times, you're convicted, then you're going to jail for 90 days. And we're going to get you off the street, and we're going to give our community a little respite from your criminal activity, from your public nuisance. And I'm thinking, of course, there's going to be some ridiculous pushback to this. What is it going to be? You know, because we can't even repeat offenders. We can't, God forbid, that you arrest people who are consistently victimizing law-abiding community members. Well, of course, it's the campaign policy program director for the ACLU of Washington. The Everett Herald quoted her in its article on this, saying, incarceration itself is incredibly disruptive to people's lives, said Jasmine Clark, the Smart Justice Campaign Policy Program Director for ACLU Washington. You're talking about a potential loss of employment, loss of housing, loss of custody of their children, loss of any type of government resources. She went on to say that locking people up doesn't address the underlying issues like addiction or poverty. She said, we cannot punish people into recovery. And then she notes that laws against public drug use disproportionately impact the homeless, given people with homes have the option of using drugs privately. So when she says in there that, you know, talks about, and again, I want you to really focus on the way that individuals who are opposed to any level of incarceration speak about this issue. You know, she's talking about incarceration itself is incredibly disruptive to people's lives. You know what else is disruptive to people's lives? Being the victim of a crime, having stuff you worked hard for stolen from you, feeling unsafe in your community, having to spend money to increase home security, having to change what you do in your day-to-day life because you're worried about criminal behavior, that's disruptive to someone's life. Why don't you care about those disruptions to people's lives? And then she went on to say, you're talking about a potential loss of employment, loss of housing, loss of custody of their children, loss of any type of government resources. Again, what about the losses suffered by law-abiding individuals who are working hard, trying to raise a family, trying to make ends meet? What about the losses that they suffer as a result of repeat criminal acts? Be it theft, be it property damage, be it assault. We have to change this mindset of consistently prioritizing people who are breaking the law over people who are following the law. And I don't know what it is going to take to make that switch for some of these individuals, if it's going to take them being personally victimized by crime to make that switch. But when I think about the American Civil Liberties Union, you know, wanting all Americans, what it's supposed to be at its core, to be able to live free and to not fear that they're going to be discriminated against. And I just think, why aren't you also standing up for individuals who are at the receiving end of some of this criminal behavior? What about their right to feel like, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? And we forget about them way too often. And it's a narrative that really has to change. So I like this law out of Marysville. I think it's a good proposed ordinance. If you're committing six crimes, and to think that you wouldn't want somebody who commits six of these crimes to spend time in jail is insane to me. So unfortunately, we're going to have to stop listening to people like the ACLU if we hope to dig ourselves out of this crime crisis. Coming up next, I want to talk about the watered-down version of the drug ordinance that the city of Seattle is going to vote on at 2 p.m. and why it is setting Seattle police officers up to fail. It is setting Seattle police officers up for increased scrutiny, increased criticism, probably unfairly, and increased accusations that they're just a bunch of racist pigs, because I just picture that happening. But first, we've been talking about our friend Wes Jones, a wonderful real estate agent in our area. You can check him out at sellwithwes.com. He and his team have an innovative marketing strategy to get the most possible eyeballs on your listing. And also, they have something called the Listing Boost Concierge Service, where they can come in and handle everything everything you need to get your home on the market. Updates if you need it. They can help pay for those updates out up front. We spoke with Susan in Federal Way, who used that service to sell the home she'd been living in for 25 years.
I knew I had to paint. I knew I needed to get new flooring. I needed to get new lighting. I told him up front that I was very interested, that I did not have the time or the finances to do what needed to be done. And he immediately jumped in with, well, I do. Work started immediately. And I would say in 2 to 3 weeks, they had landscaping done. They had all the painting done. The new floors were put in. All the lighting was put in. It just was all so fast. And the rest is history. It was on the market for 7 days. I was able to get well over listing price.
To be specific, Susan got 20 offers, sold it for 15% over list price, and ended up getting $200,000 more than an investor offered her before the renovations. Love it. Love that story. So if that sounds like something that might interest you, if you're in the market to sell your home, visit sellwithwest.com, sellwithwest.com. You can start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwest.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, coming up at 2 p.m., if you're listening to this later, it's 12:30 right now as we're live. You really should join the show live. Lots of stuff happens live. Coming up at 2 p.m. today, the Seattle City Council is expected to pass an ordinance that would make it a crime again in the city of Seattle, a misdemeanor crime, to possess or use illegal drugs. So this comes, of course, after, you know, the Blake decision at the state level nullified our state's felony drug possession statute. It really put a lot of responsibility in the hands of cities to figure out, okay, what are we going to do? Are we going to try to get something on the books so we can pursue these cases as a misdemeanor? And, I mean, the need to do this in Seattle is clear. It is clear. We are the epicenter of the drug crisis, certainly in Washington state, and the epicenter of the fentanyl crisis in the United States of America. It is very hard to go down 3rd Avenue without seeing people openly using or even openly overdosing on drugs. So the fact that earlier this year there was a common sense proposal put forth that would have said, yep, this is going to be a misdemeanor crime. If you are caught using out in the open or possessing, then you can be arrested. And you'll recall that the councilman for downtown, Andrew Lewis, is the one who killed that bill. He was the deciding no vote. The city council district that needed it the most. And he was like, no, because there are activists in the room who are like, this will resuscitate the war on drugs, which is ridiculous. As long as I've lived here, almost 15 years, Seattle has never had a war on drugs. Did the war on drugs exist at one point in America? Yes, it hasn't existed in Seattle for a very long time. Seattle has always been, since I've lived here, very focused on either not arresting anyone for anything, but trying to get people into diversion programs. So to suggest that Seattle would be resuscitating a war on drugs is an absolutely ridiculous thing. So that fails. And then, of course, there's all this panic and blowback. And the mayor's like, well, we got to come up with something or so people aren't this angry at us. And they came up with a compromise that is just about the worst compromise I can think of. And I don't think it's going to do much of anything. It's just so they can say, we passed something, but then nothing will change. And what the compromise is, essentially, is they can arrest an individual who is using drugs out in the open only if that person presents a danger to others. Which, to me, I don't understand how you are going to gauge whether someone presents a danger to others. And also, I think it's going to be very hard. Like, what kind of circumstances are you looking for? That someone's what? Got, you know, folded over in the Fetty leans? And what? They're simultaneously stabbing someone with a knife? Like, what do you mean that they have to present a danger to other people in order to arrest them for using drugs out in the open? Because if they present a danger to other people, they're doing something that is a clear and present danger, then chances are there's a different crime they're committing in the process. And there would already be something on the books for that. So to me, I don't see how this is going to be able to be utilized. And I'll get to more on that in a moment, but I just had to play. There was a City Council Public Safety Committee meeting last Wednesday, and they shouldn't call it the Public Safety Committee because they don't do anything on that committee to make the public more safe. And it's led by Councilwoman Lisa Herbold, who is just about the antithesis of an elected leader who cares about public safety. But there's a couple things I want to note about this compromise. One of the reasons she says that they need to do it this way, that it can't be just police going out and arresting people, is because we don't have very many police officers. Here's what she said.
We know that a law enforcement only approach won't work. not only because of the limited number of officers and the limitations on jail capacity, but because enforcement only is not an approach that works for everyone.
So we need to pass this worthless law because we don't have enough police officers to deal with these crimes? Whose fault is that? This is a lady who was at the forefront of pushing for police defunding in 2020, who vilified officers for that entire summer until it led to a mass exodus that has not relented ever since. So you ruin public safety in the city. You directly contribute to the record low police staffing. And then you use that deficit in police officers to push nonsensical policies because, oh, we don't have enough police officers to enforce the law. Self-fulfilling prophecy, the worst kind. The other thing I couldn't help but notice in this debate last Wednesday, Andrew Lewis, again, the councilman for downtown, pray to God he doesn't get his job back in November. He's saying that, you know, what this compromise bill will allow them to do is to fully utilize their LEAD program, Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion, and make sure that they're pushing more people into diversion. And he had this to say about the LEAD program.
And to have a policy put in place that triages, prioritizes, and takes full advantage of a ecosystem that we have developed to an extent that is an international best practice, where law enforcement assisted diversion will go around the world to give seminars on the work that we have done around harm reduction informed care.
You're telling me that Seattle's drug diversion program is an internationally recognized success? You're telling me that the people who run Seattle's drug diversion program go around the world telling other people how to do things like us? I'm going to pray for whatever cities and countries that those individuals visited. Because if the city that is at the forefront of the fentanyl crisis nationally, that's in a state that has the highest rate of increases in fentanyl overdoses of any state in the union, has a program that is internationally recognized for drug diversion, we're all screwed, because that cannot be the case. Now, here's my larger issue that I'm going to predict exactly what's going to happen with all of this. I'm going to predict that police officers are never going to utilize this new ordinance, because the new ordinance requires officers to make the judgment call as to whether someone caught using drugs or possessing drugs also presents a danger to others. Here's why that's a problem. All of the pushback over recriminalizing drug possession in Seattle, all of it, is around race. Here's Lisa Herbold again talking about what she considers the justification for watering this bill down so it isn't reliant so much on a police response.
Prior federal, state, and local drug enforcement and policies, including the war on drugs, has disproportionately impacted Black, Indigenous, and people of color, and that causes trauma and pain that still linger in these communities today. And the bill states that the city of Seattle is committed to not repeating the errors of the past and will work to have the implementation. We'll have the implementation of this ordinance to balance public safety with the well-being of individuals using controlled substance.
So the way they did things before was racist. So we're not going to lead with a law enforcement approach because law enforcement is inherently racist and inherently biased, and arresting people for drug use and drug possession is going to have racist outcomes. That's what critics of criminalizing drug use and drug possession say in the city. So the challenge is now you're going to take the people who you say are racist, who you say their actions to arrest people have disparate outcomes, and you're going to put the onus on them to decide whether to arrest someone for illicit drug use. Here again is Lisa Herbold.
This bill directs officers to use their discretion to not choose to arrest because they are not meeting the definition in the bill of committing harm to others.
So again, you're going to ask officers who you think are racist to make a determination whether to arrest someone for a crime that you say has racist outcomes when people are arrested. Cops aren't going to do that. They're not going to arrest anyone because they'll be walking on eggshells. They could have every justification to say, I'm arresting this person, they're using drugs, they're also a danger to others. And no matter the outcomes, you're going to come back and you're going to say that the outcomes were racist. So there's no way. There is no way this sets Seattle police officers up to fail, where they are going to have to, every single time they encounter someone using drugs who's a danger to others, if they can even figure out what the frick that means, they are going to subconsciously consider the skin color of the person, consider the housing status of the person. And they're going to say, well, I can't arrest this person because if I do, yeah, they're black or yeah, they're homeless. And this meets the threshold for arrest, but I'm not going to arrest this person because I don't have Lisa Herbold and all the activists at city council coming back and trying to come for my job, trying to tell me that we're racist, even though this person, you know, who just happens to be black or happens to be homeless, is doing exactly what the law is supposed to protect against. You're setting them up for fail. This law isn't going to do anything. It's never going to be enforced. It's never going to be enforced, and I don't blame Seattle police. It's a nonsense law, so these politicians who voted down the first common sense proposal to just make it illegal to do an illegal thing, it's so they can, so Andrew Lewis can on the campaign trail for the next 2 months and say, we fixed it. We passed a strong drug possession bill to fix the drug crisis, when he knows that it's never going to be used. It's so transparent. It's insane. And one of the only people who seems to acknowledge the clear flaws with it is Councilwoman Sarah Nelson, a citywide council member who has sometimes been alone on an island screaming out about the absolute insanity of some of these policy proposals.
The crisis we see playing out on our streets is the most crushing public health and safety issue of our time, with Washington having the highest number of overdoses in the U.S. and the vast majority occurring in Seattle. And restricting arrests means people will not be diverted into treatment, which is the goal. It's the goal that we've been stating all along here and is still my fundamental goal. And I'm also very concerned about the legal risks presented by these proposed modifications to state law. In the August 14th special meeting, I expressed concern that requiring officers to assess a threat of harm to others, however that's defined, and we haven't seen the EO yet, the executive order, inserts officer discretion directly into the law and could open the city up to allegations of biased policing and or be used in a motion to dismiss by the defense.
Exactly. That's common sense. How can you pass an ordinance like this unless it is crystal clear what harm to others means? At that same meeting, Councilwoman Teresa Mosqueda, one of the most progressive members of the council who's running for King County Council, she wanted to make it clear it's not harm to others if you're blowing crack smoke in someone's face. And she said that in and of itself doesn't constitute harm. So what kind of harm are you talking about? If you have a law that has to do with illegal drug use in public, and you're saying that that person could stand there and blow crack smoke or blow meth in an innocent person's face, that doesn't constitute a harm to that person? You guys have lost your ever-loving mind. And Sarah Nelson sitting there, I can't even imagine how frustrating that is. Like, you guys, even if we make arrests on this, you don't think that these are going to be challenged? You don't think there's going to be lawsuits? You don't think that's going to open up the city and the taxpayers to litigation? These people are insane. So anyway, I know there's a huge, actually I think it's happening right now, Nicole, right? There's a big public safety rally. People are not happy with the watered down version, people with common sense, but it's still going to pass. And mark my word, Andrew Lewis is going to use that to say he cares about restoring downtown. It's ludicrous. And we will have an update tomorrow on the show because it's happening today. We'll see what people have to say. We'll see if there's any surprises. I mean, Andrew Lewis flip-flopped at the last minute the last time. Maybe he'll flip-flop at the last minute again. Vote against it. I don't know. All right. We have talked a lot about a woman named Talana Reed on the show. She was appointed to the Olympia School Board to fill a vacancy, and now she's running to be on the Olympia School Board as an official elected member. And she has just scored a key endorsement despite comments made in the past that should disqualify her from holding public office. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right, Talana Reid. You've heard her name because we talked about her a lot on the show. I'm going to play for you a montage of Talana Reid's greatest hits. Roll it, Nicole.
The police. Both black women were murdered by the police. And it amazes me how those pigs can sit over there to watch us peacefully discuss, talk about what we want changed in this state. It amazes me. And they don't pay attention until we tear it up. So just see, before I get started, tear everything up in this city until they do what we want them to do.
If I can't beat them, I'm not going to join them, but I'm going to infiltrate. And I'm going to get in there and I'm going to be a voice from the inside. They've deemed me a threat to security, and they need to.
There are poor white people. There are marginalized groups that are not people of color. White folks, you had a 400-year head start. I do not feel sorry for you if you're poor. We need to tear shit for that.
Town that is historically racist. I mean, that's the culture of the city. You guys are changing that, but we cannot change it until we actually infiltrate.
They consider me a security threat, and they should. Cops are pigs, encouraging rioting. We need to tear this city up. The city that you want to represent on the school board. The woman is certifiable. She's racist. She is a racist, and she said herself she's a security risk. They should consider her a security risk. Well, guess what? That racist security risk? She just got the endorsement of the Washington Education Association's Political Action Committee. She has gotten the endorsement of Washington teachers, the teachers' union. Shock of the century. She bragged about it in a post on social media. I just received the Washington Education Association Political Action Committee endorsement. Thank you. This woman should be nowhere near kids, should be nowhere near an entity that dictates the future of children's education and the quality of that education. And the teachers' union, the most powerful union in the state, and I would argue one of the most powerful entities in the state, is signing off on her to be a school board member. We were alerted to this by Alicia Perkins, who we've had on the show many times. She is not only a mom, she sent three kids through the Olympia School District. She went to the Olympia School District herself, so did her husband, and she has been on a one-woman tirade to try to expose some of the crazy stuff happening in that school district. So I asked her to hop on the show with us today to react to news of Talana Reid's big endorsement. Alicia Perkins, welcome back to Undivided.
Thanks, Brandy.
I say it like that because, you know, at this point we should just hire you as an Olympia School District correspondent. There's so much going on.
Yeah, I'm just making friends every day.
Yeah, so there's not a lot that surprises me out of Olympia on the issue of education anymore. I will say, maybe it's naive, this is very surprising to me, considering, you know, the video, she's actively encouraged people to break the law, she's called cops pigs, and everybody knows about this. So are you as surprised as I am?
I have to say I'm really not. I think that this further perpetuates the belief that was already out there that our union leadership, not necessarily the educators themselves, but the leadership has been completely ideologically captured, very political. And so it does not really surprise me that they've endorsed her.
Yeah. And I read, so we got the questions that were part of the endorsement process. And as I read through them, I can kind of see, okay, clearly they're being driven by identitarianism and race and social justice issues. You have that same list of questions in front of you. I know you've had a chance to read it. Are there any questions from the endorsement process from WEA that stick out to you?
Yeah, there's a few that stick out to me. One is WEA believes that making schools safe for all students and staff helps promote safe and welcoming communities. Fine. This includes expanding restorative justice models to promote social emotional growth and positive relationship building in schools. Do you support making schools safer for all members, including students of staff and color? So these are all yes or no answers. Another one is, do you support policies that promote, not protect, but promote racial equity, eliminate discrimination, and combat racism in our public schools? Another one is, do you support policies that promote, once again, not protect, rights that are already established in the state and federal level, that promote LGBTQIA plus transgender non-binary students and staff in our public schools and colleges? So, you know, these are a couple of, a few examples of questions that are asked candidates who are running for office that, you know, I believe require a very nuanced discussion. But the premise of the question is, this is what we believe. Are you on board? Yes or no?
Yeah, yes or no. And as you said, no room for nuance in any of that. And who's going to check no when it says, do you support, you know, making it safe for people of all skin colors? And it's like, well, nobody's going to say no, but they might have some caveats with the yes about, you know, what does that mean to promote restorative justice in schools? And is there a place for that kind of stuff in schools? It's just, it's really wild stuff. You are really clued in and in contact with teachers and staff. I mean, that's where you get a lot of your information from, is stuff that they feed to you. How are your sources reacting to this endorsement?
I mean, immediately I heard from staff, everyone from teachers to nurses to, you know, secretarial staff, who are embarrassed by this. You know, they were not really given an input on this, and they're embarrassed that their representation is endorsing someone with a clear history that's embarrassing. I don't know another way to say it. And they're also endorsing incumbents that a lot of people are very uncomfortable with, because these incumbents have also shown themselves to be part of the problem and part of the reason that the Olympia School District has had so many difficulties over the last few years.
Yeah. What do you think the message, what message does this send to the community, and particularly to parents who have school-aged children, that someone like Talana Reed, who, among other things, is caught on video calling cops pigs, caught on video saying, you know, basically that people should go tear the city up and commit crimes. What do you think it says to parents with kids in school in that district about this being someone who might actually get elected?
Well, I think it clearly states that they are supporting her for office to be a continued school board director, which puts her in charge in large part of the complete running of the school district. So I think an endorsement is very clear, and that's also going to come with financial help for her campaign. So I would take it very seriously. I think the only silver lining here is that the more this kind of stuff happens, the more people's eyes are open to what's really going on, and the amount of ideological and political influence that's involved in school boards right now.
Yeah, I mean, we are truly living in the twilight zone. All right, Alicia Perkins, keep fighting the good fight. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Brandy.
It is the furthest thing from what's best for kids. And that's what really gets me, is this is the Washington Education Association. This is a teachers union. If you need any more proof that the teachers union is about them, is about educators, you know, whenever they go on strikes that are illegal, and then they say, well, we're doing this for the kids. We're doing this to improve the kids' education. No, you're doing this for yourselves. And if you ever needed an example that the entity of the teachers union, I'm not saying every individual teacher that's part of the union, the entity of the teachers union, the powers that be, that they're in it for themselves, their own ideology, this is evidence of that. You're going to endorse a woman who has called on people to commit criminal acts, called on people to riot in the city that she wants to represent parents on, has called cops pigs, has called herself a security risk. If you ever needed evidence that that union is not about kids, that it's about the opposite of what's best for kids, this is it. Insane to me. You know, like I told Alicia, I thought I was done being surprised by the Olympia School District and what happens there. There is not a chance if I have a child, I would send them to that district. All right, we'll dip outside of Washington State and see what's happening down in Portland momentarily. But first, if you are struggling under the weight of high gas prices, maybe the long-term care tax and a bevy of other things that the government has come up with to take money from you, you might be interested in having an opportunity to save a little bit of money on insurance. I mean, we all need insurance, right? And Firstmark Insurance offers a great opportunity to do a full assessment of your current insurance, your insurance needs, and to go out and shop the market for you. It's called the Firstmark Challenge. They do it for free. It just takes a little bit of your time to meet with them. I did it virtually and just talk through what you need, what you have, and they'll go out and do an assessment for you. And then they'll come back to you and say, hey, here's what we found. You can either choose to move over to Firstmark or keep what you already have. Here's Dave Taylor. He is the CEO of Firstmark.
We believe and we say that we will help 100% of the people that we work with. Okay. Now that doesn't mean necessarily that 100% of the people we work with are going to become Firstmark clients, but we believe that we will actually help 100% of the people, whether that be stay with your current carrier, but let's modify your coverage a bit so you're better protected, or ultimately, hopefully come over to Firstmark. We're going to put you with a different company and give you better coverage, right? So the challenge is really challenging individuals to give us an opportunity to prove that to them. That's really what the Firstmark challenge is.
Yeah, and I've had a lot of different feedback from listeners and viewers who took the Firstmark Challenge. I heard from one who she's saving $100 a month on her insurance, and her insurance is just as good. It's $1,200 a year. I heard from a couple of people who said they did the Firstmark Challenge. Firstmark came back to them and said, your insurance is just fine. You don't need a change. Like, literally turned away the business because they told them the truth. And so no matter what the outcome is, I do think it's a great exercise and you're going to learn a lot from it and possibly save money. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. They work for you. All right, dipping outside of Washington State, but not very far. We're just scooting on down to Oregon, to Portland, which in a lot of ways, Portland is worse off than Seattle. I think that there are some parodies certainly in the issues that we're dealing with homelessness. But when I kind of arrange the West Coast crisis cities, I feel like it's San Francisco, Portland, Seattle. And like San Francisco is trying to come out of the depths of its crisis. I feel like they're going to be the first, hopefully, to emerge from the insanity. You got Portland, and then you got Seattle. Seattle's not far behind. But I think when you look at what's happened in San Francisco, when you look at what's happened in Portland, that is going to foreshadow and has foreshadowed what's to come for Seattle. And this was an article in the Seattle Times that talks about the fact that while elsewhere in Oregon and across the country, there's been this rebound in tourism since pre-pandemic, Portland's really struggling still. The headline, Portland Hotels in Crisis After Another Lackluster Summer. It says convention activity is pretty solid this year. Miller said he basically works in tourism down in Portland because events were booked before the pandemic. But he said the vast majority of events have at least some delegates reporting negative experiences downtown. And he said many conventions that canceled during the pandemic opted not to rebook in Portland because they consider the city too dangerous. He went on to say visitor sentiment is not improving, and we know the reputational damage being done has the potential to last if we don't seek quick action to make our streets safer. And look, that has been an issue in Seattle as well, with, of course, the reputation that Seattle is growing across the country, not in a positive way for its quote-unquote street scene. That negative reputation has been building for a long time. I've heard stories from Visit Seattle about, you know, major conventions, like 8,000 people, the potential to bring tens of millions of dollars in revenue into the city and for businesses big and small. I've heard stories of them wanting to meet with city leaders, like the police department, to ask them questions about whether their attendees will be safe. And that's pretty insane. And so Portland is not bouncing back. I don't know, you know, and they've tried to now kind of switch course and try to take a harder line on encampments, take a harder line on drug use. And meanwhile, in Seattle, well, just look what's happening at 2 p.m. today. Seattle is still waffling on what should be the most pressing issue, drug use, drug addiction, and the related crime and mental illness. And they're going to pass some watered-down bill at two that doesn't do a darn thing. All you need to do is look to Portland to see what's ahead for Seattle in a year, and look to San Francisco to see what's ahead for Seattle in 2 years if we do not dramatically change course. All right, before we get to questions and comments from the stream, also, did you pluck some wedding advice for me, Nicole? We're doing wedding advice comments first during our Q&A all week long. I am feeling just fantastic ahead of my wedding. In fact, one of my bridesmaids, I don't know if I can say which one. Jessamine's doing ads now for Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. If I couldn't say, I did. I think she's doing ads. She works over
I don't know if she's doing them yet, but...
She is. Yeah, I talked to her.
I know she's doing the program.
She's down almost 20 pounds. Mm-hmm. And she's only been doing it for a little while.
Right.
So it's going to be like an Eastside Weight Loss Clinic wedding. I'm down more than 35 pounds. I need to weigh myself because I've been losing some weight on my momentum into my wedding. But anyway, feeling so much better than I did this time last year. I am so glad that I did this for myself before the wedding. And that's really what motivated me is, one, I saw pictures of myself I didn't particularly like. And then I'm like, oh my God, I'm getting married in a year. I really need to get back to my pre-pandemic weight. And so I'm happy I started it when I did. If you've been considering it, the first step you should take is just go to eastsideweightlossclinic.com and schedule a free 15-minute consultation. You can ask Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team any questions you have about the program. You can decide whether it's right for you before you commit to it, which is always good. Not every weight loss program is for every person. There's a lot out there. Some might work for you, some might not. So that free 15-minute consultation is critical to deciding whether it's something you want to invest in. So eastsideweightlossclinic.com. All right. Questions and comments from the live stream. Did you hear my hot mic moment at the end of the show yesterday?
Well, I did.
I was like, oh, it's hot in here. It's hot in here. It's because it is hot in here. And I have a sweater on today.
You wore a turtleneck.
stupid. All right, let's start with Danielle. Danielle had some advice. I think this came in a super... No, she emailed it to me on Patreon. She sent me a Patreon message, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. Danielle Crawford. Hi, Brandy and Nicole. Hello. Congrats on your upcoming wedding. Some wedding day advice. Do not stress for a single second over the little things. Meaning, if something is out of place or not perfect on guest tables or chairs, it's okay. Nobody will notice. Definitely eat something while getting hair and makeup done so you don't pass out or get hangry. And mostly enjoy the day. It will be one of the greatest days of your life. Love the show. Keep up the great work you do. Thank you, Danielle. I agree with all of that. I think I'll be okay about not sweating the little things. A little worried about the weather. It seems like it's going to be pretty cold at night. So there's just some other things, but I'm feeling great.
I think it's fine. We'll have there's heaters and...
You know what keeps you warm?
A jacket.
Booze.
And booze.
Shots of tequila. Not too many because we're responsible.
And only after the ceremony.
Only after the ceremony, yes. Leah says, with $10 Super Chat, hi, Brandy and Nicole. Happy wedding week. Yesterday, you asked what motivates politicians in the media to excuse these criminals' behaviors. I have my own thoughts, but would love to hear yours. What motivates politicians in the media to excuse these criminals' behavior? Identitarianism, an obsession with identity. Because when you think about the things that they're excusing, et cetera, it always comes back to race for them, right? Is they're finding excuses for people on the basis of race or whether they're homeless or otherwise, in their view, disadvantaged. And so they want to be seen as sort of culturally awoke. I'm trying to think of different phrases for woke, culturally awake. And the media won't question politicians when they make it an issue of race. So when you have politicians who are very highly ideological and they make it an issue of race, the media is not going to push back against that because media members don't want to be called racist. I mean, Lord knows I was called racist a lot in mainstream news and I was always terrified, like, am I going to lose my job over this? Because I'm just trying to speak the truth. So that is really what it boils down to, a cowardice. It is a type of cowardice from the media. And then just politicians who are so identity obsessed that they simply cannot focus on anything else. I mean, how else do you explain to Lana Reed getting an endorsement from the Washington Education Association, if not race, if not what they view as like the single most important issue, not someone's actual qualifications for a job? So that's what it is. Ideology from politicians and cowardice from the media. Okay, let's see. H gave us a $20 super chat. And then also we'll read a different comment because your super chat didn't have any words attached to it. It says, we've been married for 36 years, adopted 6 children, love each other through the good and the bad, blessed and lucky. That's amazing. You adopted 6 kids? That is awesome. Good
Pretty
for
amazing.
You. That is so cool. I wouldn't rule out adoption, you know? I keep telling Mike, I said, listen, we should just adopt a kid that's about the age of your friend's kids.
Yep.
Because then, you know, we're just like, we weren't behind at all.
Yep. And you're you know, that much closer to an empty nest and
that's true.
Retirement.
Let's adopt some 17-year-olds, you know? That's good. I'll pay for their college and all that stuff. All right. Denise Young said, hey, I've been out of town. Where do we get our Undivided merch? Undividedpod.com. Undividedpod.com. And people have already started receiving their orders. We're sending out some more shipments today. If you had a hat or mug in your order, your shipment's probably going to be heading out the door today. And I hope to see. I have a dream. I have a dream that one day I will see a Common Sense 2024 bumper sticker on every car in the state.
I like it. That's a big dream.
Thank you. Yes, I appreciate it. On Yakima, and the mayor of Yakima calling 911 on a guy collecting right-wing signatures outside of Walmart, who apparently knew more about the law than the mayor of Yakima did. Jackie says, 911 is for emergencies. Someone hurt, in danger, there's a fire, a serious car accident, someone's been attacked. Is the mayor that daft, and shouldn't she know better? No, it's because she's the mayor. And she wanted to call 911 to express her concern over far-right wing people trying to, what, reduce taxes for the working class?
Nobody else should do that, but she's allowed.
Yeah,
she's
I mean, there's always stories like that where it's like a politician who's calling 911. I mean, didn't Lisa Herbold, when an RV showed up outside her house, she called the chief, right?
Yeah.
Okay, ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Charles says, it's public record. It shouldn't be bleeped out. She's a smart, independent woman. She knew what she was doing, right? I disagree with. I think if there's not a reason to put someone's personal phone number out there, I think you probably shouldn't, especially as a, like a member of the media or something.
Yeah, that could have been redacted.
There's no reason, because what other reason besides people will use it to call her and complain? So I would not have put her phone number out. I would have redacted it. In Marysville, how they want to do the unthinkable thing of actually having punishments for people who are repeatedly violating the law. Oh, can't imagine. D says property value just went up in Marysville. Yeah, that's people are like, I like that. I like that. Thanks, Daryl. Diana says, Nearing is awesome. Wish we could clone him. His son, Nate, is pretty good as well. I love the Nearings. I shouldn't love any politicians, but Marysville Mayor John Nearing and his son, Nate Nearing, is a member of the Snohomish City Council, County Council. And they're both just really common sense, really reasonable, moderates, really prioritize working together and common sense policies. And this is one of them. And again, for the ACLU to suggest that this is like, you know, racist or it's like going to hurt homeless people. The Nearings, I think it's just probably a family quality about them. These aren't people who
common sense
obviously are racist. And they're certainly not people who are like, I hate the homeless, get them out of my city. They're very kind, reasonable human beings. And if anyone took a chance to get to know them, they would not assign those negative intentions to a policy like this.
You're trying to protect the people not committing crimes. That's
what exactly. That's what I mean. It's like, who's protecting people who are just doing what they're supposed to be doing? Bob Larson says, the war on drugs was, for all intents and purposes, ended a decade ago. So how do you like us now? Yeah. Simi, 1981, says things were going better when there was a war on drugs compared to this citywide open drug scene. I mean, look, I don't think that we need to be doing hard prison time for people who are actually addicted to drugs. I don't agree with that. But to suggest that the city of Seattle can continue to do exactly what it's been doing for the last 10 years, which is nothing when it comes to the open air drug use and drug sales on our streets, and to think that that is somehow going to make the situation better is la-la land. It is truly the Twilight Zone.
We need to bring back DARE. Was DARE. It Scruff? Scruff? Scruffy?
So it was, something like DARE that. Was drug resistance.
What is it? GRADE drug was, abuse resistance education.
Yes, that's yes. And then GRADE was gang was resistance it? Education and training.
Yes.
But Scruff McGuff?
Yeah,
was it Scruff McGuff? Yep. Okay.
Bring him back.
The only like childhood thing I learned that really stuck with me is like the cigarette smoke ads where it's like, you'll die. You know? I've never smoked a cigarette. And it's probably because my dad did. I hated the smell.
That's
so
why
much.
I don't.
He used to pay me a nickel apiece to go in the little lava rock outside the house and pick up the little wet, soggy cigarette
Ew.
Butts. A nickel apiece though. I'd get a little cup and I'd go, and I'd go collect my nickels from my dad. Anyway, yeah, messed up childhood.
But yeah, okay. My dad used to never smoke inside. It was always outside. But he would be outside in the snow and the rain and the whatever smoking. I'm like, I will never be that desperate for a smoke.
No, absolutely not. Wow, we're going overtime. We got stuff to do. But nothing more important than reading your questions and your comments. Lynn says, on Seattle's watered-down ordinance, I have tears running down my face. I don't even live on the west side of the state. I cannot believe people such as Herbold are setting policies and have a voice. Those of us who are obeying the laws who are affected have no voice, yet she does. Luckily, not for much longer, because she's not running to keep her seat. On Olympia and the Washington Education Association endorsing Talana Reid, Jeffrey says the teachers union in the state has gotten way away with far too much because of Inslee and Sideshow Bob letting them. Kim says the legislature has ruined the educational system by tying the hands of administrators and teachers to discipline kids. It's stupidity in Olympia. Independent Men United said homeschool if you care about your kids. And also I did a live poll that said, are you surprised? The WEA PAC endorsed Reid. 19% said yes. 72% said no. 9% said, I don't know enough to be able to make a judgment on that. All right. Great questions and comments today. People loved it. And we'll get another wedding. Get your wedding advice in. We'll make sure we do another little bit of wedding advice. Nicole, thank you. All right. Before we get to our closing sanity check, I've been talking about our new partnership with Bulwark Capital and Zach Abraham. And we started the sponsorship in the middle of the month because actually coming up next Thursday, they have a live Know Your Risk webinar to be able to help you weather this crazy volatility that we're in right now. I spoke with Zach Abraham about what you can learn if you attend.
We always talk about risk management. Name of our show is Know Your Risk Radio. What does risk management mean? Well, what it means is generating similar or even better returns while taking less risk, right? Generally speaking. And we'll just show you this isn't a line. We'll show you how it's worked. We'll show you how we've done that. How thinking outside the box can greatly limit our risk and actually simultaneously enhance our upside.
Yeah, and so you can sign up at knowyourriskradio.com. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. It is a free live webinar. It's tomorrow, or it's next week, next Thursday. Starts at 3 p.m. in the afternoon. And the space is limited because they want to make sure that people aren't, you know, can ask questions and all of that. So make sure you reserve your space quickly. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. All right. If you've ever driven on Washington roadways, which I know you have, chances are you've seen the filth on the sides of the roadway, on the on-ramps and off-ramps. Well, the state of Washington says it knows who to blame, and it is definitely not the homeless. Let's get to it in our closing sanity check. So this is the article from our friend Jason Rance, who's going to be on the show with us tomorrow to talk about some stuff. But the headline, Washington Litter Study Blames Everyone But the Homeless. So in it, he talks about how in the first litter study in almost 20 years, the Washington State Department of Ecology claimed that 37.8 million pounds of waste ends up outside of trash or recycling bins instead of, you know, where it belongs. So it goes into the solutions, goes into who they think is to blame for this. Nicole, do you have any guesses about who the state says is to blame for the vast majority of this trash winding up in ditches, on ramps, off ramps? What does common sense tell you who's to blame?
Republicans.
That's close enough.
Right.
Drivers.
Drivers.
Who don't have garbage bags in their car. Which Nicole has a little trash can in her car, which I love, and I really need one of those. It's like a little thing. You just drip your trash in. But apparently all of you are terrible human beings, and you need to carry trash cans in your car. Now, do people litter? Sure. Of course people litter.
I don't see it a lot, though.
I do not see a lot of it. But of course it happens.
Cigarette butts, yes.
Unsecured loads, you know, people are unintentionally littering because they didn't strap down their loads and it's just going all over the highway. But we know where the vast majority of trash in these areas comes from. It's clearly from homeless encampments. How many times, you go up and down I-5 and you look to the left, right, you look on the on and off ramps, homeless encampments everywhere. Piles of trash. Nowhere in this state study does it attribute it to homeless individuals and homeless encampments, illegal homeless encampments. I mean, we have Governor Jay Inslee bragging about his homeless encampment removal project on state right-of-ways along highways. So we know that the governor has acknowledged that it's a problem, but this study, we're supposed to believe that we're supposed to take it seriously when they're not even acknowledging that clearly there's a lot of garbage along our freeways because of homeless encampments. And Jason Rance had pushed back against the study, and a spokesperson for the DOE told him, we did not try to evaluate areas where people are living unsheltered. Dealing with those issues requires a very different approach and a different set of stools. Stools. Tools. A different set of tools. He went on to say that based on their study, quote, we know that an overwhelming majority of the litter in our state is coming from travelers who either toss it out the window, fail to clean out the truck bed, or don't properly secure their cargo. So wait, you said you know that an overwhelming amount of the litter is coming from travelers. However, you did not try to evaluate areas where people are living unsheltered. So you don't know that a majority amount of the litter is coming from travelers because you're telling Jason Rantz you intentionally did not evaluate areas or try to evaluate areas where people are living unsheltered. This is the sort of insanity that is our state government. I look at this, I compare this, it's very similar to me to the study that UW did saying that there's widespread meth and fentanyl contamination on public transit. And then King County Metro says, good news, everything's safe. Just the blatant gaslighting. That's what this is. You're trying to gaslight us into thinking that this is the family, you know, going down I-90 on a road trip and they're responsible for the heaps of trash that very clearly resemble homeless encampments. This is insane stuff. It's like, how am I supposed to ever trust another government study in my life when they try to spin it like this? Crazy. All right, that has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Undivided Overtime 110. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. If you have not signed up to support the show already, please do so. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. And I'll say it, it won't even be a slip of the tongue today. It is hot in here, Nicole.